Kia ora, and welcome to the New Zealand Property Market Podcast, brought to you by CoreLogic, produced by Agents TV for the 14th of September 2020. I'm Head of Research Nick Goodall, and I'm joined by our Senior Property Economist, Calvin Davidson, down in Christchurch. Kei te pihi, a koe, Calvin.
Kei te pai.
Ah, ka pai. Well done, mate. Well done. How's your weekend?
Weekend was a different one for me. We went away with a group of friends, school slash university friends, spent some time up in the central North Island, which was pretty awesome, but I'm glad I only do it once a year. It's eat too much, drink too much, get too little sleep. When you have all that excitement, it's quite a bit of a come down on the other side. But awesome time away and heaps of activities to do up there. We did something called a bungee swing, which, it was cool to do. But as one of my other mates said, he feels like he doesn't need to do it again. Do it once. It was awesome. But really great to get back and see the family. They're pretty excited. Get into some work and a quieter one next weekend, I'd say. All good. How about you?
No doubt, mate, no doubt. So a pretty intense weekend for you. You're probably feeling a little bit hiyomoi, or sleepy, that is. Yeah. It is, of course, Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori this week, Māori Language Week. Just thought I'd throw a few things in there, and hopefully everyone gets a chance to participate in some way during this week. Good weekend for me too, mate. We had Nana here, mother-in-law. She was looking after the kids on Saturday night, actually, as we had a bit of a night out as well, had a friend's 30th. So we had a bit of a big night, me and Karina, that night, which was fun and nice to actually enjoy ourselves a little bit. So that was really cool. Caught up with some friends and a mate who listens to the podcast, and he was very glowing. I'm going to give a little shout out to Godfrey. He'll be listening on his Tuesday morning commute. So kia ora, Godfrey, mate. Good to chat on Saturday night. Great to catch up. But it's a good weekend. And we just got out about as well with Nana, obviously, and kids down to the school and get the bikes out and all that sort of stuff. So weather was decent enough, if a little windy. Wasn't too hungover on Sunday. So it always feels like a bit of a success when you can have a night out, enjoy yourself, and then not feel too punished the next day. So I'd call it a success, mate.
Yeah, sounds pretty good to me. As I say, you wouldn't want to do these things too much, but every once in a while. And, of course, to catch up with mates like we both did is well worth it.
Yeah, we're way too old for that sort of stuff now to be doing it too frequently.
Well, I certainly am.
Me trying to cling on to people's 30ths, that's obviously, I'm closer to 40 than 30, but I'm still claiming people's 30ths as if it's around my age group.
Yeah, nice one. Worth doing.
So how was it, mate? You're Central North Island. You said you went to Taupō for most of the time. How was the sort of vibe there? Tourism, local economy. How were things looking?
Yeah, it was. Mixed messages. Probably the restaurants at night were ram-jammed, and so that was pretty good. People were still going out, but just did get the sense at quieter times, certainly around lunch times, we had some relatively slow service, and you just did get the impression from that hospitality sector that headcounts might be down and they're running on pretty thin crews. Also at the airport, you can tell that things were a lot quieter around the airport. We had a few travel delays, shall we say, not in New Zealand's fault, but you could certainly tell that the staff there at the airport were sort of scrambling around to deal with it, and flight numbers were down. So, a couple of little snippets there of the strains we're going through that we talk about all the time. Hospitality's clearly been affected, air travel's clearly been affected, plane numbers were down and staff were down, and as I say, we had some delays caused by some nature, but apart from that, it was some mixed messages, some good things, some bad, and I guess just a little insight into what's going on the ground.
Yeah, but I think also, your experience there probably just says that, everyone is kind of used to just dealing with things now, with dealing at lower operation levels or whatever. Everything's still open and going, but maybe not at full capacity. But, businesses have generally adjusted pretty well to what they need to right now. So I think that's the really interesting part, really. Yeah, okay. I think the other interesting thing with that, with your experience there is that, most businesses have kind of adjusted to the new normal, right? So, it's not absolute dire straits. You can see they're not quite as busy and things sort of have slowed down a little bit. but most businesses have found a way to continue operating in an efficient way. And I suppose that's probably the key thing this time around, is that, yeah, we've been here before. Most businesses know what's going on. It's not ideal. They're not at full capacity, not going to be making the same profit or revenue, but they managed to get by. The key is that it doesn't, you know, last forever, I suppose. So that's probably the other thing I think I take from that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think you can see signs of that. And also had a look in a real estate agent window, and there looked to be plenty of property for sale up there, actually. So it goes against the listing position that we talk about quite a lot. So, I think you're right. It generally felt like things were operating, but not like they might normally.
Yeah, and then the key is going to be, how long is that going to last for? And it's just after 1 o'clock, and so we've just sort of seen a few alerts pop through of what the plan is with the alert levels. It looks like the rest of New Zealand could come out of level two, move to level one next Monday. So fingers crossed that is the case. But Auckland to stay at level 2.5 until at least next Wednesday. So an extension of another week for Auckland. If we move into looking at the data now, I think, it almost didn't matter for me when I was thinking about this. I was like, oh, it doesn't really matter. I'm not expecting to be pushed back forever for a long time. But, in terms of the relationship for the property market, for what's happening in the property market, this extension probably doesn't matter too much. When we look at some of that data, appraisals generated by agents are now back to the same levels as level one at the start of August. So before we went to the most recent, level three in Auckland and level two elsewhere. And valuations ordered by the banks are at least 9% higher than that period of time, that sort of first 1.5 weeks, or 10th or 11th of August. What does that mean, really? I suppose it means the spring lift in listings is still likely to be a little delayed and potentially reduced because of those appraisals dropping, but they are actually back to what we'd call normal now anyway. And so, agents are essentially operating at normal levels in this level 2.5 status anyway. So I think that's, in terms of what it means to the property market, I don't think it means too much, this 1 week extension, but of course it'll mean a lot to businesses and people and everything else. So still important to note, but maybe not so much for the property market. I was also looking at the listings data. I did a presentation this morning for government actually. And from the last 2 years, this is the time, or actually probably 2 weeks in, to when we should have seen a lift in those listings. But the impact of lockdown is really showing, with those 2 weeks being held back at a time where they should have already been lifting. So we are already going to see that lack of listings, especially in Auckland. And what does it ultimately mean? Same story we've been talking about, continued constraint on immediate supply, those properties listed for sale, with demand remaining firm as measured by those, those valuations being ordered by the banks. It's going to lead to more of the same, and that's resilient values. And we're seeing that through all the measures in terms of house price index all holding up and everything. So that's kind of, that's probably my take on, the new announcement and where the property market activity is at. Anything else that sort of pick up on from that, mate?
No, I'd go along with all of that. Certainly, it doesn't feel to me like, I've only heard the announcement at the same time that you actually said it. Doesn't sound to me like that means too much. Everyone, like we were talking about just a bit earlier, people have seemed to have adjusted. And so it seems like it's that way in the property market too. And then just anecdotally, we bring these things in now and again, just around here where I live, properties still selling pretty quick. I've heard little snippets of multiple offers on houses coming in. So yeah, it just fits with that story of lots of demand, limited supply, upward pressure on prices. So go along with all of that.
Yeah, cool. Let's move on from that, Ben, and probably kick into some macroeconomic data from last week. The first one I was going to note was, I know that's a preliminary figure, and we're getting pretty regular updates of, levels of business confidence and consumer confidence, and maybe it ties into, your trip and everything as well. But September preliminary business confidence, as reported by ANZ, actually surprisingly good. Is that fair, or what do you think?
Yeah, surprisingly good. The way they phrased it was, could be worse. So I think that, referring to my trip, I think that's probably the experience I got from on the ground, that it seems like we certainly didn't see any empty shops. So it sort of feels that way, that, okay, it could be worse. Yep, staff numbers might be down and that sort of thing. And that's kind of the message that's coming through from this ANZ survey, that they said it could be worse. The numbers are still negative, and that's the thing to bear in mind. It still doesn't point to a great scenario, but they're a lot better than they were. And So that's really the thing, that you are coming off a low base and the numbers are still a bit disappointing, but better than they were. And given everything that's going on, like ANZ said, could be worse. And it fits with so many things we see on the hard indicators, as well as these confidence things, that compared back to where we thought they'd be when we were in April, definitely better than that. So yeah, that's the general message. It could be better, but it could be worse.
And I mean, interesting, especially when you think the wage subsidy ends tomorrow. That would also be some consideration for businesses, knowing that that support's going to be dropping away this week. So, the fact that it actually is still holding up okay, yeah, still negative. And I know that when you look at things like intention to employ and things is struggling as well. So it's not an ideal situation. But yeah, given everything that's going on, could be worse. I like it. Nice line for that one. Probably just summarizes it perfectly.
Yep, agreed.
Okay, cool, man. And then the rental data from MB, what's that telling us?
Yeah, so this I found this quite interesting, actually. We've talked before about how rental growth sort of ticks along, and it has done for a fair old while at 4 or 5% in normal economic conditions. But actually, I think now we are starting to see a clearer evidence of it turning. I was sort of just wanting to wait a few months to see if it was genuine, and to me now it kind of looks like it is. So we smooth it out, take a 3-month average just to get rid of some of those gyrations that you get from month to month. And the latest figure on that measure was 2.8% up. So yep, the rents are still higher on average than they were this time last year by 2.8%. But that growth's the lowest it's been for 7 or 8 years. So there has been a pretty clear slowdown in those figures. And I think based on the figures we see through rental listings, it's not like those rental listings are really spiking up. So there's no real clear evidence of sort of oversupply or anything. So I think it just suggests to me that the slowdown in rental growth is purely down to, I guess, landlords adjusting, their price setting behavior. They are starting to acknowledge, I guess, that we're in a tough environment and are setting rents accordingly and having to, I guess, cater to those tenants' needs. So it's not so much a flood of properties, just more a realization and an acknowledgement of the position we're in. So yeah, interesting stats, and of course always looking ahead to the next one.
Yeah, and I think that we've talked about in the past, with all the changes to tenancy acts and things like that, and there's always the question of landlords just going to pass on the cost through rents. Our point has always been, yes, they try to, yes, there's always a little bit of a lift, but actually rents are mostly tied to income. And so if people aren't earning more money, you can't charge them more rent. And that sort of sounds like that would be reflected on this data too, the fact that we know incomes are essentially, are going to be struggling a little bit because of all this going on. And so landlords who are having to fill out their property are not being able to push that rent up to maybe cover the same level of costs, and they're having to adjust to, the market, which is going to be, less demand for property, for rental property, with people's incomes. They might have to be moved. There are some that will move home if they lose their job. There are some that will pick a few more people into a house, maybe to leave a list property or whatever. So those landlords that are listing cannot list for the same price they would have 3, 6, 12 months ago, whatever it is. So I think that to me reflects that as well, that rental prices are anchored by income, and we know income has taken a hit because of all the COVID-19 and lockdowns, ensuing lockdowns or whatever that happened. So it all kind of makes sense and wraps that into one, really.
Yeah, it does. And these figures are based on new bonds lodged as well. So it is actually, okay, and for different purposes, you might want a different sort of measurement base for the figures. But I think what that does tell us is it's picking up the current market. So these are new bonds being lodged. And so at this point in time, it really is the most relevant figures, and it's showing us what's going on out there at the moment. And like we've talked about, we're seeing some rental growth slowdown reflecting what we know is going on. So yeah, I was quite interested by that, and we'll look ahead to the next one.
Yeah, cool, man. All right, well then moving on, I think the other thing that came out late last week, Friday it was, and you were already winging your way to Taupo anyway, was the Ryan's figures, of course. And the main thing I suppose I always take from this is how many sales were done, the sales volumes from Ryan's. And really, it just reiterated to me, it was a strong August once again. Maybe a little bit surprising, given we know the lockdown occurred. But again, it's probably because everyone adjusted. They know they can still transact through that period, and so that continued to happen. So August was another strong month. But it did make me think again, there was an article a couple of weeks ago, or some headlines a few weeks ago, saying, what COVID sales volumes in Auckland, back to the same point they were 2019, and it made us sort of dig into it a bit at the time. And so I thought, given there was sort of all this positivity on Friday about how many sales were happening in the market and it was making up for the lockdown period, sort of reiterate that point that we made at the time, which was, yes, while the first 7 months of this year in Auckland were on parity with 2019, there's sort of a couple of reasons for that. There was really strong sales volumes in the first 3 months of this year. So they were tracking well ahead of 2019 at the end of March before COVID even hit. COVID hit, impacted those volumes, sure. And we've seen the bounce back to make up for some of that loss in April and May. But actually, when you look at the first 7 months this year, the first 7 months last year were the worst 7 months since 2010. So it was because there were just so few sales last year that this year's back to parity in Auckland anyway, and the rest of the country is still well down on sales volumes last year because the rest of the, you know, rest of the country was still seeing quite strong turnover last year, whereas Auckland had been on the sort of downturn for a while before the end of last year, where we saw volumes and values start to tick up once again, and that led into the strength at the start of this year as well. So I did think it was worth making that point as well, that, yeah, while another strong month of sales, absolutely not going to deny that at all. It is still a little bit of catch up, I think, on those earlier months, but we do need to put it into that wider context and not get carried away as well, because we're still expecting nationwide, you know, we're probably going to be 15 to 20% down on last year's sales when you look at it from the whole country anyway. Auckland might not be as far behind, but again, it'll be coming off that relatively low base. So we'll just wanted to forecast that one there as well and you know, remind that line really.
Yeah. Yeah, always, I've talked about before, always trying to put that perspective on things, and you know, sometimes the stats can lie a little bit, so always try and get to the bottom of it. So yeah, all good.
Yep, always the thing with, I suppose, any selective collection of stats, you know, we do it all the time as well. It's not, you know, necessarily trying to be deceptive. It's just sometimes it's the first stat that pops up. It doesn't tell you the whole story, so you need to dig a bit deeper. And I think that was certainly the case, because that surprised me when I first read that stuff anyway. All right, mate. Well, otherwise, more economic stuff. Net migration data for July. So obviously, you know, that migration data comes out a little bit after the month is finished. Again, we're basically focusing on what, Kiwis returning back to New Zealand?
Yep. So those figures were released just this morning, and continuation of what we've seen for the last couple of months, really. The overall total is down because of non-citizens leaving, basically. And of course, not many arriving, if any. So that overall total has been driven over the past 5 or 6 years by those non-citizens, heaps of new migrants coming to New Zealand. That's been driving it. Now that, you know, a good number of those are leaving, then that's kind of is holding the overall total down. But within that overall total, as you said, it's the Kiwis coming back that are really, that's really keeping that where it is. And so in the past 12 months, we've seen almost 20,000 New Zealanders come back here in net terms. So that's actually that's a record high pretty much for going back 15, 20 years at least that we can see in the stats. So that returning Kiwi effect is still pretty strong in these latest numbers. And I mean, you know, everything's still up for grabs in this environment, but I suspect that that number could stay pretty high for quite a while. And I guess once we work through the sort of technicalities around the numbers at the moment with you know, the way Stats New Zealand measures it and all these different things, once all the dust settles, hopefully, you know, COVID passes, we could well see that returning Kiwi factor is keeping that balance up. So, and certainly higher than it would have been otherwise. That's kind of the key point. So, yep, more of the same really in those migration numbers and implications for the housing market. Well, more demand than there otherwise would have been. And that's, as we've talked about before, potentially these returning Kiwis are, you know, more easily able to access at least buying property straight away. They might have saved up a bit of cash. So, who knows how it all plays out, but it's certainly stronger for the housing market than it would otherwise have been.
Yeah, that's actually a question that I got this morning on the presentation was, yeah, what impact of Kiwis coming home, buying property, are they buying new property? And also, potentially, you could have the foreign buyers actually buying new property too, because if you buy, you know, off the plan in a large enough apartment unit block, then you can actually still be a foreign buyer buying here because you're adding to supply. So they were asking if we had done any stats on that, which I had to say, obviously, we haven't. Quite difficult to get because we don't actually track foreign buyers ourselves. That gets, you know, done by Stats New Zealand from the title data. It doesn't get released elsewhere to match it with other information, but you know, what impact of, you know, what might look like first home buyers in our data. They could look like returnees. They could look like investors if they already own property here. And are they buying some new off the plan properties as well, which in many ways you'd say is a good thing because it's going to keep that underlying demand for new construction, which we know the government is certainly very considerate of as well. So yeah, some good questions coming out of that one, and so I'll see if we can do anything else to understand maybe some of the detail behind that buyer classification, but very difficult to link the foreign buyer stuff anyway. But one to probably note when we're looking at, we have seen a lift in first home buyers buying newer property, you know, whether that's new and small apartments too, apartments, townhouses, new builds, and part of that could actually be, yeah, people coming back from overseas rather than your classic being here all their life and just trying to get on the property market. So certainly a good little pickup on that one as well.
Oh, it's all very interesting stuff. And in the end, it's that population figure that's going to drive everything, isn't it, in terms of the property market. So having more people in the country than there otherwise would have been will, you know, mean more property demand than there otherwise would have been. And whether that comes through renting or buying, that's the, you know, still adds up to more demand. So yeah, it's certainly a key part of the puzzle at the moment.
Yeah. No, I think that absolutely nails it. Yeah, they're going to need, yeah, this demand for property in general, which is, you know, going to cause prices to at the very least hold up. But yeah, in general means that, you know, that's going to continue for a while. And, you know, like you say, longer term, who knows about borders, but, you know, do we continue to be seen as a safer haven than the rest of the world? You know, maybe more people will still consider coming here, and so that long-term outlook remains relatively strong for population growth. So yeah, no, good wrap up. I mean, speaking of buyer classification, I don't think we'll go into it. We did just update the data for August, so we sort of wrapped that into Q3's figures, so it's now two-thirds complete. Of course, I had a very brief look at it, and essentially it's the same story we've been talking about prior anyway. Strength of first-home buyers, strength of investors with mortgages, and that really means, that's really backed up by, you know, the strength and the growth that we see in that sort of lower to middle tier of the market, where there's still consistent demand, which is pushing up prices or holding prices up, whereas at the top end, we're not seeing it quite as strong. So that looks to be continuing on from adding August data to Q3. And I know that you'll be writing the sort of market pulse article this week on buyer classification. So you might unearth a few more little interesting gems, and we can talk about that next week once you've had a chance to do that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, looking forward to getting to those stats. Always of interest every month. So yeah, I'll get stuck into that after this probably.
There's always so many ways to cut the data, so you've got to be careful not to get too dragged into it. But yeah, such a gold piece of data, that one. The other one from, and there's another CoreLogic release, was the mapping the market data. So it's that sort of geospatial tool, you know, heat map if you like, to check out what the median value of every suburb is across the country, and also what the value change has been by each suburb as well, along with a little bit of commentary, you know, on that GIS tool, which is freely available to anyone to check out. So do suggest going and having a look at that. You can sort of see, you know, for any wannabe first home buyers, what suburbs might be in your range or not using that median value, but also seeing where the growth has continued. It's a yearly look, so we are looking at that sort of period where we've gone, you know, down and up again, or at least slowed down. But certainly some still good context there. And I spoke to journalist at Radio New Zealand very briefly about that last week as well. So nice to get another, you know, another data release out there, get that data out in people's hands. Pretty useful information, nice visualization of that property change over time, including dollar value and percentage value. And does start to, you know, put into context just how strong things have been in the lead up to COVID hitting in March as well. So yeah, worthwhile just mentioning that one's been updated as well.
Yeah, cool. The I suppose, like you say, the annual comparison there is, you know, it's the standard product, and it's kind of what we're doing. I suppose in the media release, which people may or may not have seen, hopefully they did, just try to pick up a little bit around some of the more recent trends, and generally pretty much every suburb you look in, really, you can see that things have tracked sideways or even slightly up since COVID hit. Just some signs in Queen, well, certainly Queenstown is one where that doesn't apply. Things are definitely weaker in those suburbs. And just some of those more expensive ones in Auckland around some of those eastern bays. So, but apart from those, and let's face it, those are two really expensive pockets of the country. Apart from there, you know, everything else has trucked along. So, yeah, that's another small message you can get out of there.
Yeah, no, good point. Okay, mate. Well, we probably should start to look ahead and wrap this up for today. This week, I think the key thing is a couple of economic ones, really. It's the GDP data for Q2, which I know is a while ago now. And given we've got the faster measure from Stats New Zealand, Treasury and Co. Now, it's not as probably interesting, but still it's the official measure, so we'll still be checking that one out. And the other one is, of course, the pre-election economic and fiscal update. So, you know, I thought maybe you could let us know why is that important, why we're looking for the pre-foo and what are you expecting for the GDP data?
So, I mean, on the GDP data, like you say, it's let's face it, a few months out of date now. And so what it's going to show is a big fall. Yeah, we most people are saying sort of a double digit fall in GDP from Q1 to Q2, which will be easily the biggest on record, and you know, sort of a real historical quirk when we look back. Hopefully, that's only a one off. So it could be down sort of 10 or 12% in terms of economic activity from Q1 to Q2. So that'll generate some headlines for sure. But I think, you know, anybody reading between the lines and looking a bit deeper will say that's Q2. We know things have moved on since then. We know economic activity's bounced back. So really, it's kind of historical influence or interest, but not much more than that. And I think people will move on pretty quickly and acknowledge that things have bounced back. And I guess fingers crossed that we don't go back into that scenario where we see sort of a double-digit fall in economic activity. So yeah, those stats are out this week. It'll, as I say, generate some headlines from the scale of the fall, but hopefully people will move on pretty quick. With the pre-foo, I mean, it's important because it just sort of sets the starting point or the finishing point for the government books for this parliament and sets the scene for what the new government will be dealing with. And this one clearly of huge interest because of the ramping up in debt levels lately. And I guess it's just so that everybody can see where the current position, where we're at. A lot of moving parts at the moment with different government spending programs. And so this one's where the Treasury will really just get that all down on paper and set it out, sets the starting point for the next government and move on. But yeah, it's going to be a really interesting one. Clearly we're going to see a big rise in debt levels and, you know, some pretty bad numbers, but we know things have bounced back. And so hopefully, you know, we can get a good economic outcome over the next few months, but yeah, another thing to look out for.
Yeah, cool. That's awesome. All right, mate. Well, is there anything else you had on your list of things to chat about today, or else should we get going?
No, that's all. Glad to be back, even if it was a day later than I was planning on being back. But yeah, we'll get stuck in from here on.
Awesome, mate. Well, thanks for that. Thank you for your thoughts. I know you have a bit of a crazy morning, but cheers for that. And just to say thanks for listening. Please do subscribe, rate, and review us, and get in touch with us. We're available on Twitter, LinkedIn, email as well, all within that podcast player. Called Nick Takawingua. This is Calvin. You've been listening to the New Zealand Property Market Podcast. Mā te wā.